Accession number 22623, Reel 8.
Leach, Reel 8.
I always remember it. He did, as I said, he didn't mince words in all matters in that thing. I always remember he came up after a chat and recently. And I always remember leaning over in the ward, and there's always a retinue followed them round, the sister and the matron. And that's what, and he was a tall man, tallish fellow. He says, "I want your bloody arse out of there," he says. "Something big coming on. I want your bloody arse out of there, you know." Yes, there's something big coming on. And that was Anzio. Eventually, after a few days, we came out and we went to the convalescent home at that time, was Sorrento. Lovely place. And that sort of thing. And from Sorrento to a transit camp, and then of course, eventually, after a few, this all happens in days and days. It seems to take a long time to say, but it happens quickly. We found ourselves with a whole lot of chaps that had arrived from this country. Some chaps which quite a long time ago, I'd taken part in their training in Lincolnshire, and eventually now we're finding ourselves on draft. And we rejoined the battalion in time to, of course, just sufficient time to get organised to board a destroyer just outside of Naples on the harvest to go up to Anzio. Anzio, of course, the 1st British Division was the British Division that had landed unopposed, and a Yankee one, as you know, had landed at Natuna in the same way. And, well, when we arrived up there, I always remember arriving there, we thought we'd come to a different country. Beautiful sands, oh, gorgeous sunset. Sunshine, beautiful. We laid out and sunbathed, and then a small beachhead about 10 miles, everything under Yankee command, of course. As we pulled into the harbour, this groin, only one boat could come in, only a small port, Anzio. Germans over and a bomb just in front of the ship. Another little thing, these are little perks which books don't tell you about. On the trip up there, there's a battalion on this thing. That destroyer's cook has spent all night long and baking bread, loaves of bread. And bread was a thing which I told you before, we didn't see a great deal of. And if you can imagine, blokes coming off of the ship, between the straps of their pack, which are loaf of bread, being held on, that's what the company looked like. So, anyway... there you are. I mean, those are little oddities not known. A wonderful chap, not destroyer. Well, we landed, and of course, eventually, we found ourselves for a time on the beach, digging in. We dug on, and then we'd come to a different world. Jerry's used to come over now and again, and stonk us and that sort of thing, but not much. It was a peaceful, to what we'd just come from, peaceful and beautiful, that we were in an island paradise, more or less. But what had happened, as you know, instead of pushing on, he's stuck there. And of course, from the time he decided to move out and push on, we always called Mark Clark, Mark Time, because we'd been under him for so long with the Fifth Army, And that what used to happen. You used to get to a river, and it'd be days before anything seemed to be doing. And so he was nicknamed, as far as we were concerned, Mark Time. But eventually we went and were into what became known as Pagolone Woods.
Is this at Anzio?
This is Anzio. And it was we then found that we were going to replace an American combat unit at in the woods. But all day long, the Yanks were backwards and forwards up into the woods with jeeps and we and that. Of course, we knew that's the sort of thing you didn't do, keep up with, because on the Bratsy Hills further away, we knew very well that they would be watching and taking the hand. But that was the thing. A Yank never walked if he could ride. And they had plenty of transport and plenty of this and plenty of that. We didn't. And we were in these woods and it kept coming up there. And eventually, a company of Yankee troops came up and they were going to relieve us while we could move over towards the Wadis. But when he came up, and I always remember this company commander, seeing our company commander, when he came up and he saw our number of men in a company, and he'd got far more than we had, he refused to take over from us. He hadn't enough men to do what we were supposed to be going to do. And he took them away. So instead of moving out of Pagolone Woods that night, that day we didn't. So we couldn't have to stay in the woods. And the next night we moved over to take over an area which we were supposed to, to the Wadis, nearer the sea. And we got out of the woods and got into the open ground, and the Germans came over and flooded us with light from the flares. And it's they say that in a flare at night time they can see bodies on the ground even far better than they can see them in daylight. And fortunately he starved us and that sort of thing, but we didn't get any casualties. But it was a terrible thing laying down with your face down, you didn't put your face up as he flew over. And eventually, of course, we moved into this Wadi area, and the thing very much later, and of course it was getting on in the early hours of the morning, and it was January, by the way, we got into this area, and my own company commander, who normally wasn't commanding the company at the time, a junior officer was in charge of the company at the time. And we moved into this area of the Wadis, and we somehow weren't quite there. There was no one to meet us to guide us. But what there was rifles laying around, and that sort of Yankee, of course. So he said, I remember saying to him, well, what are we going to do? You know, we're not basically lost, but we don't know where we are quite, do we? And he said, oh, we'll stay here, he said, tonight, he said, and move out in day, first daylight. So I said, well, what do we move? Do we dig in? No, we won't dig in. And of course, during the few hours of the night we were there, the ground froze terribly hard. And the following morning, quite early, the Germans had decided that they would knock us off the beachhead. And, oh dear, they had infiltrated behind us. We didn't particularly know where we were in this complex. Anyway, he shelled us. quite unmercifully, really. And of course, we didn't know the area at all at the time, but later on, of course, it was to be known that the Abruzzi Hills in the distance overlooked the whole of the area. And he shelled us, and because we had casualties, and one of the casualties was herself.
How did it happen?
Well, a shell, the shell is that they had it. In they caught me in, and well, you suddenly felt this searing thing, sort of a numbness, and then found that you were somehow were unable to move.
This is the inside of your left thigh.
Yes, in here. And I was taking a rifle at the time. That was nowhere to be seen. There was one or two chaps in the same area as me who were wounded and that sort of thing. My pack, I don't know what had happened to that. And of course, in my pack was my wallet, which I'd lost with my photos. Everything was lost. Straight away, you felt this knee and this going swelling and growing stiff, so it's obvious that you can see. I managed to get over to the area where company headquarters, because I was all in that particular area. And I said, "Well, I've been wounded. I said there was a few more." The lieutenant said, "Oh, well, you better make your way back best you can." To RAP somehow, I don't know where it is, but we just went back that way, and I took some more of the wounded back with us, and we walked and crawled back, eventually got on to the coast road, and caught up with a little house on the side of the road, which the Yanks had turned into first aid post. And that's, of course, how I started to way back out of it again, back to, eventually, Naples. I saw it, tag was wrote out, put on you, and they jeeped you back down into Anzio, where the hospital was, of course, dug in the sand dunes. With tented sand dunes, and back to this area, and of course my face was all pockmarked with very tiny bits of shrapnel, very small bits of shrapnel, and those stretches, and they took us back, the Yanks dropped us off at this, what was the busiest section of the hospital, and there we were all laying down in the beautiful sun, and that sort of thing back there. Not that far, only the perimeter at that time was only about 10 miles from the port. So everything that fell had to hit something, ammunition dumps, hospitals, anything. And I was lucky there. I was put on a stretcher. And a doctor, captain, came round. "Oh," looked over. "Oh," he said. "Oh, Black Cats. I was a medical officer in the Black Cats," he said. That's 56 Div, Black Cat, the divisional sign. Had an orderly with him, and rows of wounded and things. He says, "Bring him up." And I was taken out, and it obviously jumped a queue. And I was taken to an area, and they put laid on the stretcher, and they put this wad in, or whatever it was, with a chemical or something in it, smelt, and had to lay there for a good 20 minutes or so, and that opened the pores. And I always remember this corporal coming lifting all these bits all off your face. From there, I don't remember much more, that I was being carried in under the, in down and under the tented hospital, and well, I don't remember it anymore then, until waking up out in the open again, right near this yawning great tank landing ship on the yawning, loads and loads and loads on stretchers. My trousers had been cut off here. I had one trouser leg, and the others I had nothing. And my boots were tied together and were sort of laced around my neck so that they were on the body here. And an envelope in my boots and a note. And these lumps of shrapnel which the bloke had taken out, wishing me luck and that sort of thing. And well, the drill from then was that ships had to bring to Anzio, loaded up the lorries, and they were loaded up at Naples and driven off the ship. You see, and that sort of thing, and empty stuff went back, and tanks came out. This tank, and there I was one of them, went back to Naples, loaded up with his decks full of wounded, and that sort of thing. And then I went back to the hospital. I hadn't long left early on. From there, I eventually, after hospitalisation, that was flown from Naples back down to Syracuse in Sicily, in the Yank Dakotas. They'd taken the seats out, and there was racks. So you were on a stretcher in leather rack, and about that much above it was another stretcher with
about 6 inches.
Yeah. And I always remember there's another little quirk there. Of course, responsible and that from Naples was the Yanks. And of course, the nursing staff, they were Yankees. And they came round with these round donuts. And of course, when they found out that I wasn't a Yank, she came and took me out. She came and took it back again. They were running to the Yanks. But anyway, we got to Naples, and after time in the hospital there, at Naples, they'd redone it and put the plaster on. They didn't do that up at the nursery. And I always remember this nurse saying, "You'll be no good," she says, "in Piccadilly tonight, would you?" But before they put the plaster on, they put three maggots in. Three white maggots. And of course, eventually I said, I got down to Sicily, and eventually it was time, they said, "Well, you take that off." And they did cut it, but of course, when they put the plaster on, they hadn't shaved the legs, the hairs, and all that. They pulled, and it was painful, that was. But I shall never forget when they opened the case and took it off. This beautiful wound, open wound, beautiful light pink, no sign of any maggots. Yeah, that was to take the pus and all the badness out. From the shells, that sort of thing. In the meantime, Templar Alexander had ordered 56 div out from Anzio back to Cairo. Right? And of course, when it came time for me to sort of decide what to do, I remember I was at the rest home in Catania, Acreale, actually. And this major came and he said, "Well," she said, "I think," he said, "Sir, I think you're fit enough now to move on." He says, "What about having a downgrade in you?" He says, "You have a cushy job in, you know, done your bit, haven't you?" I said, "No." If you're in, we were then in Mediterranean area, not CMF, we were then in the Middle East. Come on then. It's always a hell of a job. They seem reluctant to give you pay. They do get you, you know, that you never seem to get the full amount of what you're entitled to in somebody else's area. I said, no, I want to. By that, I knew my lot were out in Cairo. And I said, no, I don't want to be downgraded. I said, I want to rejoin the unit.
Was that because of pay? Was that because of pay?
Well, no, not because of pay. No, no, because no, in one sense, it was because they didn't accept you really in another command. It was a bit that way, yes. But I wanted to get back in Cairo at those time. Of course, the war had passed. I mean, a time ago. I mean, things were, and I knew they were. Oh, everyone was having leave, which I did have. Anyway, what happened? He said, "You'll regret it." He says, "But there, that's what you want. Sign." And within a few days, there was a boat going from Syracuse, and I found myself on it. Back to Alexandria, eventually in Cairo. Everyone had a fortnight's leave. Everyone had a fortnight's leave. And at that time, it was coming up for the king's birthday. And of course, Cairo was more or less back to semi. And as 56 Divi were first division, senior division in the area at the time, it fell on them to, of course, be the main part of the king's birthday honours, which, of course, the ambassador took. And anyway, while they were there, obviously they'd gone back there because, of course, they'd lost so much of it. It had to be built up again. In North Africa and all around the area, of course, were all these light ACAC and RA units, which, of course, the war had swept on into Europe and were out there basically, well, one doesn't say doing nothing in that sense, but weren't being used. So they were breaking down a lot of these light ACAC and these ACAC units and these units which they'd use for guarding the domes and that sort of thing. And we were in an area well outside of Cairo called Beni Yusuf by the Sweetwater Canal. Beni Yusuf, we called it Benny's Housewife. It's a tented area over, and this one road, black road, went through and through and through and through as far as you could see, and the tents on the side. And all these, eventually, by the time I got to it was the king's birthday time, and of course it was time for the celebration. All these chaps arrived from all these units, and they gave, after everyone had had leave, the orders came, right, you've got 5 weeks, and this went over for all the brigades, all the three brigades in. So it was quite a very big job. Our brigade here was Beni Yusuf's, and our brigadier was a fellow named Scott Elliott, ex-racing motorist, Brigadier Scott Elliott. And we would be part and parcel of taking part. I'd arrive back with my unit, B Company, and that sort of thing. And to find all these floats all assembled there, and they had given the units 5 weeks to turn them into infantrymen. 5 weeks. Well, you could never do that. Also, at this time, there was this show to go on in Cairo, King's birthday, with all that it inferred. And of course, we had the task, of course, artillerymen. I mean, they never did. Everything was done in review order, as though it was back in on the horse guards. It wasn't just marching in threes like they'd all the training and everything. It would be done in review order, great long lines of the 9th Battalion had its band, or what had been reclaimed and made up of it. And in the unit, in the brigade, as I told you, was the 7th Oxford Bucks, who were light infantry. So there was a difference in the pace, as you know, as which they march. But they hadn't, obviously, you haven't got a band, not many bands are allowed to go anyway, but we had. So 8th and 9th Battalion could use their band. You could put, for training, you could put the band in between the two lots, you see, in the music. But, of course, the light infantry march at a different speed and a different pace. And, of course, if you're marching together, there's these differences in pace. And the band, you probably heard of Georges Melitrino, had his band.
Melitrino?
Yes, yes. He, at that time, was the band in, and was called the Cairo Area Military Band. Its functions to do all the stuff, you know, and things that were occurring in Cairo at that time. Well, his band, for the training them and for marching and that, so his band was brought out, and if you can imagine, there's just this one road, and everything else was sand for this training and all to learn all the commands and that sort of thing. And his band used to stand at the side of the road. They'd come out from Cairo and play the music for the Oxen Bucks. I should never forget when Scott Elliott came out for the rehearsal of it. And Scott Elliott says, right, all officers will fall out behind me, Ramsey, on the side of him. RSM will take over. And all the warrant officers and they take over the officers' command, you see. Well, as I say, it's all in extended order, and you count 9 paces before these remained off, and you've got, you know, you're standing there. The other band starts, and he gave the order to start all. And away went 8th Battalion in extended order, three columns of three, but all right across. And then the band. And then at that particular time, of course, I would have been, I was a senior sergeant, so I would have been in charge of B Company, in that sense. Not on the day, of course, but for the sense of all the officers listening and getting the right words of command. And I shall never forget this, and they started off. And if you can imagine, this is about 4 o'clock in the morning, because for the remainder of the hot, after about 7, of course, you slept, it's so hot. as the daylight had come, and it started off, and the 8th Battalion went off, and we started waiting for the, you know, as I'm counting, the company in front moving off. So one, I was counting them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. And I just got it, was just coming out of my mouth. B Company will march past in review order. You know, that was the command. And then it should have been quick march. Just before I got quick march out, a voice in the back said, get stuffed! And I knew it. We had, I told you, we had the tiny Marsh heavyweight boxing, and they were so brand new with all this business. Yeah, it gets that. But we all marched off, I didn't repeat it, we all marched off. And, but the next fiasco was that is all the Oxen sack started moving, and they finished up coming right through us. Oh, Scott Elliott, he was furious. He had the poor devils, it dismissed us. He had the poor devils out in the heat of the day, didn't he? Yes, I should forget that. But what a marvellous sight that was in Cairo when it occurred. In memory, there used to be the mounted police, the red caps were mounted there. And you never saw such a sight in all your life. It was a really marvellous day. From there, we're back to training, and eventually we did an exercise up this road We never came to the end of it. It was a black, long, metalled road right across the bay. Eventually, we got on the ship, SS Britannic, whole brigade of us, and away we left Egypt into the Mediterranean. We thought, hello, we're going back home to get ready for D-Day, didn't we? That's what we thought. But suddenly, going that way, it turned that way. Next thing,
turned right.
Taranto. And to land at Taranto, and eventually,